Hello and welcome to Korean Context, a behind-the-scenes conversation with the scholars, artists, and opinion makers who bridge our two worlds. This podcast was brought to you by the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C. I'm Martha Legutsky, and I'll be your host today. Ambassador Han Duck-soo, South Korea's ambassador to the United States, is an unassuming, low-key senior diplomat and statesman, but is perhaps the most experienced individual that has filled this role. He was Korea's first trade minister, a finance minister, and even prime minister, all across three administrations, serving both conservative and liberal governments. We spoke with him in his office just days away from the G20 summit in Seoul. He shared his views on the G20 and South Korea's role in the world today, as well as the prospects of the U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement that is currently awaiting ratification. Ambassador Han, you've led a very distinguished career. Before you were Korea's ambassador to the United States, you served as prime minister and finance minister, as well as Korea's first trade minister. What has it been like to serve in so many different important positions?
Actually, Korea has been in the process of rapid development, but in the 1990s and 20s, I think that there's a lot of efforts on the parts of government how to address the major issues that caused financial crisis in the late 90s in the form of Asian financial crisis. So about 10 years or 20 years after that financial crisis, Asian financial crisis, there's a very high sense of urgency in Korea how to make reforms and how we can be structurally efficient and how can we make the economic structure which is more sustainable. So during that period, I was starting with the trade minister and finance minister, and I worked as a government policy coordinating minister and as a prime minister. So I'm very happy to be engaged in the process of strengthening and reforming our economic structure and policies, how to be strong against any kind of crisis. So when the crisis actually occurs again in 2008, the reasons were totally different from the one of Asian financial crisis. But I think Korea could have prepared itself against that kind of a very big global financial crisis, and we made our institutions and economy already stronger, so we could weather this financial crisis in a much better way and less painstaking way. So I feel some pride in going through all those years that we should address the issues, how to make the economy stronger against any kind of possible global financial crisis, which is not actually of your own making.
As Ambassador Han stated, the 1997 to 98 Asian financial crisis, a chapter referred to by many Koreans as the IMF era, was a painful period in Korean economic history, but was also the impetus for broad structural economic reforms that better prepared Seoul to navigate the most recent financial crisis and more quickly recover. Recognized for these successes and Korea's growing influence in the world, Seoul was selected to host and chair upcoming critical international forums, including the G20 summit in November and the 2012 nuclear summit. Here's Ambassador Han commenting on South Korea's increasing leadership role in shaping the international community.
Diplomatically, this has been a very important year for Korea. Earlier this year, Korea was selected to host the next global nuclear summit in 2012, and in just a few weeks, Seoul will be hosting the much-anticipated G20 summit. Would you please talk about what these events mean for Korea?
Well, the two events are very, very important, crucial, not only for Korea as a chair, but also globally. So that is one indication that Korea now is emerging as an important country in the world. Before we actually took all the rules and and some kind of schematic structures, which were actually made by other advanced countries. We took them as given, but now as a chair, we are actively participating in the process of rulemaking, and rulemaking in the economics, but also in a very important issue of nuclear safety. So Korea's positions has been emerging from more recipient countries, aid recipient countries, and rule-taking countries. Now we are going into more active status of participating in the rulemaking process.
Next, we turn to the Seoul G20 Summit. This international gathering is significant on many fronts. It is the first summit in a non-G7 and Asian country. Also important, some view this upcoming summit as the key gathering to determine whether the G20 will continue to be the preeminent forum for global economic coordination. While the previous summits in 2008 up to the June 2010 Toronto Summit focused on combating the global financial crisis, the Seoul Summit will test whether the member governments are committed to collaborating and carrying out its agreements within a timely period. Some of the contentious issues that different governments are struggling over are, for example, currency issues. The meeting will address issues that will have both short-term and long-term effects. Thus, the stakes are high, and there is potential for the international economy to slide downward if negotiations go awry.
Well, at the Seoul Summit, we will try to agree on how we can make our economic policies coordinated to bring about high, strong, and sustainable growth. And, of course, the G20 finance ministers did a great job on bringing about some coordinated agreements on how to move on the exchange rate policies and how to reduce the external imbalances and external volatility and so on. So that is a very important issue, one. The second is that we should have some financial reforms, which were the triggering points of our crisis in 2008. And the third one will be the reform of international financial institutions, including IMF and World Bank, and IMF's role in monitoring the policies of individual members will be also emphasized. And we have the social global financial safety net issues, which will enable emerging economies not to accumulate too much foreign exchange reserves. And we will also have some platform for development. We will have a multi-year plan, and in about eight areas, we will have what kind of issues and what kind of policies can be addressed and pursued for the sound and sustainable developments.
We now shift gears to address another critical issue that many in the U.S. and Korea are watching closely to see whether South Korean President Lee Myung-bak and U.S. President Barack Obama will engage during the summit meeting. That is the U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement. Back in June 2010, President Obama set a hard deadline for all of the remaining differences between the two governments to be worked out and ready for conclusion by the G20 summit. Even so, there are many skeptics who doubt that the differences between the two countries can be resolved in time for the G20.
This agreement is so important for the two countries, U.S. and Korea. In the United States, it will increase $11 billion export from U.S. to Korea, and it will create 70,000 new jobs. And what is more important is Korea-U.S. Trade performances are in balance. In the first 6 months of this year, there is only $400 million deficit on the part of U.S., compared to $55 billion of two-way trade volumes in the first 6 months. And also, Korean businesses are now investing more in the United States than United States are investing in Korea. So in 2008, Korean businesses were investing $6.3 billion, and U.S. Business investors were investing $1.3 billion. So there's a huge trade increasing potential and job increasing potential. And also there will be more investment from Korea into the United States with these free trade agreements, which will conducive to creating jobs. So this agreement is definitely necessary. So economically, very beneficial. And in a strategic and geopolitical sense, this agreement is complementing our 60 years of a mutual defense treaty.
Despite the importance of U.S.-Korea free trade, it is still a controversial agreement that is receiving heavy opposition from within certain key U.S. sectors, such as beef and auto. We specifically asked Ambassador Han how the current agreement deals with the auto issue.
The current provisions in our Korea-U.S. free trade agreements on automobile issues are quite strong and quite multidimensional to address the problems of the complaints that has been raised by U.S. automakers. So Korea will eliminate 8% tariff right away, and U.S. will eliminate 2.5% tariff for the small cars right away, and they will phase out that 2.5% over 3 years for big cars. And Korea made some preferential arrangements for making U.S. automakers to be given preferential treatments in safety standards and the environmental standards for cars, for U.S.-made cars. And also we have some enforcement mechanisms or some kind of safeguards that if, for example, Korea is in violation of these agreements, then 2.5% tariff, which was conceded, will be reinstated by the United States government. And also we will create an automotive working group, which will always monitor the complaints of U.S. automakers, so that and if any problems arise, they would like to solve the problems through the discussions before they evolve into some kind of disputes. So it has quite a comprehensive and strong measures. But I know that U.S. automakers have something to be addressed, and the two governments will discuss it faithfully. And I hope that they will bring out the mutually acceptable solutions in time. And that's my hope.
Korea and the European Union recently announced that their own free trade agreement would be going into effect by July 1st of next year. How confident are you that the CORUS FTA can be implemented next year as well?
I'm confident, and I very much hope that we should make it as soon as possible, because already we have lost 3 years. 3 years were the period when we could have taken advantage of this agreement, which is a job-creating agreements and growth-contributing agreements, when Korea-U.S. trade are in balance and Korean investments could create jobs in the United States. So there's a definite necessity for us to make these agreements to be implemented as soon as possible. And I definitely hope that members of Congress and members of Korean National Assembly are always very national interest conscious, members of representative body. I think that, and also our trade ministers who are engaged in the discussions will know so well about the importance of these agreements.
Ambassador Han, it was an immense honor to be able to speak with you today. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you very much for me to participate in this interview. Thank you.
For more information about this episode, this podcast, and upcoming KEI events, please check out our podcast page at keia.podbean, that's podbean.com. As always, please feel free to send any questions, comments, or suggested podcast topics to me at podcast@keia.org. I'd love to hear from you, so please don't be shy. Well, that's all for now. Thanks so much for listening. It was a pleasure to have you, and we look forward to seeing you next time on Korean Context. Bye.